Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. And your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories. On Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls _ Pep.
People have their opinion.
What other falsehoods are out there?
A lot of the perception things about us.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
Rebuilds are difficult. Sometimes it takes years and years. I still believe, given a really good offseason with this draft pick that we have coming and with our ability to get some veteran players in here alongside these young guys, we can make a substantial leap.
Kick back, relax. Locked On Bulls starts now.
My job is to prepare the child for the road, not the road for the child. And these guys are men.
Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm Matt Peck, also host of Bulls Outsiders on NBC Sports Chicago, following every Bulls game this season. You can follow me on Twitter at Bulls _ Peck. You can also follow my co-host Jordan Malley at Jordan C. Malley, and we are at Locked On Bulls on Twitter and on Instagram, and hit us up on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. That text and voicemail line always there for you, 331-979-1369 for all of your Bulls thoughts, questions, comments. After you're watching the game, while you're watching the game, hit us up, send us your texts and your voicemails, and we will interact with you every week in our mailbag episodes. And guess what? Today's Wednesday, so that's what we will be doing on today's episode, taking as many of your texts as we can. I have looked at our inbox, and there are lots of them. So we will do our best to get through as many as we can today. Maybe we will revisit the text and voicemail line again later this week or early next week and double down on some mailbag content. Now that the season's underway, a bunch of you have checked back in. We appreciate it. And just a reminder, if for whatever reason you don't want to send us a text or a voicemail, you can also just email us. We are at lockedonbulls@gmail.com. Works well for some of you international listeners. Option is always on the table as well. Jordan off today, dealing with some issues with his schedule. Hopefully we will get on the mics together tomorrow or Friday. And in the meantime, I will be here talking about a variety of topics through the Bulls' first four games. A lot of stuff on the minds of our fellow Bulls fans. And hopefully we look forward to a Bulls victory again tonight. The Bulls in Cleveland taking on the Cavaliers for their first division matchup of the season. First of a few in a row. We've got the Pistons and the Pacers on deck coming up around the corner. Cavs 1-2 on the season, led by their pretty impressive front court of Kevin Love and Tristan Thompson. Thompson averaging 19 and 12 so far this season. Kevin Love 15 and 15. And then, of course, the interesting young backcourt. You got Colin Sexton, their pick from last year, and Darius Garland, who went ahead of Kobe White in this 2019 draft earlier this year. Garland currently in 28 minutes per game, averaging 9.7 points, 3.7 assists, shooting a respectable 35.7% from behind the three-point line. The real threats behind the three-point line for the Cavs that the Bulls will have to keep their eyes on tonight. Colin Sexton, who's shooting a blitzing 43.8% from downtown on 5.3 attempts per game, and also Cedi Osman shooting 41.7% on 4 attempts per game. So, should be a winnable game for the Bulls. Disappointing results in two of their earlier games this season that most people saw as winnable games, if not downright should win games, certainly winnable games. Their opener against Charlotte, and then of course coughing up that 18-point lead to the Knicks in New York on Monday. That one was real tough to swallow. Hopefully the Bulls can bounce back and find a way to close a game against a Cavs team that does have some talent, but certainly is not automatically out-talenting the Bulls on paper coming into this match. there certainly will be a focus and an emphasis, I hope, on the Bulls having a better night on the boards. We heard from Jim Boylan after their loss to the Knicks saying, we got absolutely hammered on the boards tonight, and they did. On both ends of the floor, the Bulls have been really bad. Actually, they're the third worst team in the league in giving up offensive rebounds to their opponents. They certainly were guilty of that against the Knicks and allowed the Knicks to climb back into the game with some second-chance points. And with the front court that I mentioned of Thompson and Kevin Love, both of them averaging staggering rebounds, Thompson at 12.3, Kevin Love at 15.7, the Bulls front court will have their work cut out for them tonight. Hopefully, maybe we'll see an uptick on the Bulls shooting numbers, because they have not been pretty through their first four games of the season. And plenty of guilty culprits. It's not just Lauri Markkanen, who has struggled from behind the three-point line. Otto Porter has not shot well. Satoransky has not shot well. Pretty much everybody other than Zach LaVine, who has also had a couple of off nights, has struggled shooting the ball so far this season. Surprisingly, Thad Young has been the most reliable three-point shooter on this team, and that is not a good sign. That is not what you would anticipate through the first four games of the season. It's a small sample size. I'm not panicking yet. I think this Bulls shooting is going to come around. They're getting open looks. They're just not going in. So with that, let us hit up that text and voicemail line and hear what is on the minds of you, our fellow Bulls fans. This one comes to us from the 312. We all get on LaVine and his defense, but what about Lowry? He's playing like a 7-foot shooting guard. No post moves. He's slow on defense, not a playmaker, and the guy does not block shots. He's 7 feet tall. He's just soft, in my opinion. You look at Porzingis. He's so much more aggressive, more balanced offensive game, and he's a way better rebounder. Lowry, seems more of like a Mirotić than a Dirk. Oof. Physically, yeah, he has it, but it's something missing. You guys praise him, but to me, he never shows up when we need him most. You can go 37-17 on the Hornets with little and less aggressive players, but when you go at him, he seems to go into a fold. I can name multiple times people went at him: Jabari, Bobby Portis, Siakam, Jaren Jackson, John Collins, etc. He struggles against physicality. Thanks for checking in. Thanks for the thoughts. It is true that Jordan and I are both very much enamored with Lauri Markkanen, because we have high hopes for what he can become at the NBA level as a member of this Bulls core. It is also true that on my very most recent episode, I was talking about how he and LaVine have both struggled and only had one quality game apiece so far through their first four, and that Lowry needs to be better at being a closer for this team. And that he has, like we saw him do in preseason, in several of these regular season games so far, decided to shy away from being aggressive and sit behind the three-point line. And that has not worked out for him well so far, because he has really struggled shooting the ball, the long ball. His 2-of-6 mark in their game against New York was his best mark by far through their first four games, and that is not great. Obviously, Bulls fans would be hoping that Markkanen could be somewhere between a 37% and 42% three-point shooter, because we know that shot, when it's falling, is one of the purest shots in the league. But our texter from the 312 also brings up a valid point about Lowry's defense. He is soft right now. Look, I don't necessarily agree with the rebounding, and when you're comparing him to Porzingis, you know, you brush it off as, well, yeah, he did it against Charlotte, but we did see Lowry have a game with 17 rebounds to start the season. He has talked repeatedly. Jim Boylan has talked repeatedly in the offseason about wanting that to be a focus for Lowry, to becoming a better player on both ends of the floor this season. Really focus on your rebounding, focus on your defensive rebounding, and allow that to get Lowry in transition and let that help the flow into his offensive game. Because Lowry, for a guy his size, does have ability to put the ball on the floor and bring the ball up the floor. So I think our texture is selling Lowry a little bit short in that department. But it is true that he has had some issues defensively. He and LaVine have really struggled. And there is a great piece by Stefan Noe for The Athletic that just dropped, I believe, earlier this morning, that y'all should go check out if you haven't already, talking about the Bulls' blitzing pick-and-roll defense and also some great video breakdowns embedded in that article showing you when it's worked and when it hasn't. And essentially, the Bulls and Jim Boylan have been very aggressive playing the pick and roll defense and sending two guys at the primary ball handler. And that in that first level and the first layer of that defense, blitzing the pick and roll, the Bulls have done a decent job. But it is the following movements, assuming our opponent continues to move the ball, is where the Bulls get in trouble and help defenders are not there and the rotations get messed up. And we've seen plenty of examples of that already. And Lowry is certainly a guilty culprit. He seems to not be aware of when he needs to be that help defender, when he is the lowest one on that defensive rotation, and when he needs to step over. And we have seen him increase his effort, and in some ways I think he has also improved with his footwork and his lateral quickness when he is, you know, tasked to go out and guard guys around the perimeter and guard smaller, quicker guards with solid handles. We're seeing him get better a little bit better. But his off-ball defending, much like Zach, is still the biggest problem to his defensive game. And I think that that's when you've seen this Bulls defensive system break down. It's not just Zach and Lowry. This is a young team, and it's a lot of guys playing together for the first time. The chemistry still isn't quite there, and that is very important on the defensive end when you're playing a defensive system that requires a lot of communication, a lot of switching, and a lot of rotating. And so far, the Bulls have struggled to succeed in the successive steps after that initial blitz when they're attacking that pick-and-roll player. So, again, go check out that piece by Stefan Noe. He does a great job breaking it down for Bulls fans who maybe want to learn a little bit more about what it is exactly the Bulls are trying to do, how it's succeeding, and sometimes how it's failing on the defensive end so far. But I would not disagree with our texter that Lowry's defense is still an issue for a guy who's 7 feet tall and appeared to add some bulk to his frame this offseason. Still a little bit soft protecting the rim, and of course still needs some work, and is still a bit of a negative when asked to go out and guard some smaller guys around the perimeter. So it is a work in progress, absolutely. But I still am not completely between that and his, you know, mixed bag of results on offense so far. I'm not selling on Lowry. I've seen a lot of Bulls fans over the first four games starting to press the panic button and talking about, you know, should we trade Lowry Markkanen? Yikes. I mean, it's a long season. They've had four games. I'm not pressing that panic button yet. Initial game results have been less than stellar, but we have also seen what Markkanen is capable of. All right, let's move on to our next text. This one comes to us from Shinobi from The Shy. What's up, guys? Sorry to say, but Tomas is screwing up the credit of everyone that vouched for him. Thanks for checking in, Shinobi. I understand the frustration here as someone who applauded the Satoransky sign and trade when it happened and who was so excited for Satoransky's addition to this team because I thought that he would help that first unit offensively in a lot of ways, being a high-efficiency, low usage percentage player to complement the offensive talents of Levine and Markkanen. And it's been a mixed bag of results so far. It hasn't helped that, like many of his teammates, Satoransky has not shot the ball all that well when he's playing off the ball. But I would say this, and I was getting in a fight with somebody on Twitter the other day about who thinks that Satoransky was a complete bust of a signing and that he sucks and blah, 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 he's useless. He is not useless. If you watch this team when Satoransky is on the floor, the ball moves better. It's clear as day to see that the ball moves better and does not get stuck as much when Satoransky is on the floor. He is a smart player. He makes the right reads. He makes the right passes. He's got the best court vision of anybody on this team, in my opinion. And when the Bulls were trying to regain control of that game late on Monday against the Knicks after they had coughed up the lead and managed to build that lead back up, it was Satoransky making two heads-up plays to get that game from being tied to the Bulls back up by four. On back-to-back possessions, you had Satoransky feeding a beautiful bounce pass to a cutting Markkanen for an easy dunk. And then on the next play, Satoransky recognizes that he has an ability to that he has a look to get down in on the post, use his body to shield himself and get a nice little look using the glass for an easy bucket. Just like that, the Bulls are up four again. It's little stuff like that. His assisted turnover ratio, 4.7, second best on the team right now, behind a staggering 7 from the one and only Ryan Arcidiacono. And he's also creating a lot of turnovers. He is in or around, I believe, tied for 10th in the league right now in turnovers created with 10 through the first four games. He disrupts the offense of the opposing team. He gets in passing lanes. Not only that, but you have already seen video evidence of him trying to help his less intelligent, less defensively capable teammates figure out where they're supposed to be and where they're going on the defensive end. You've seen LaVine get lost when he's playing off the ball on defense. We have already seen Satoransky conducting traffic and telling LaVine where to be on the defensive end. The guy is a smart basketball player. And he can help your team in a lot of the little ways that don't necessarily show up in the box score in much similar ways to the reasons that they brought in Thad Young, who, yeah, can potentially give you a double-double with, 12 and 10 or whatever, but it's all the little things that they do because they are smart basketball players that help the team win. And it's not a coincidence to me that of the Bulls' five best plus-minus lineups so far this season, Satoransky's in three of them. So, yes, I know the initial returns are not as much as Bulls fans were hyped about because Satoransky got talked up so much as this really smart signing by the Bulls this offseason. And again, doesn't help that he hasn't shot the ball well. But look at the little things he does. Look at the smart ways that he keeps the ball moving, making the right play. Sometimes when the Bulls have struggled to close these games and the ball is getting stuck, in two of these instances, Jim Boylan, in my opinion, has waited too long to bring Satoransky back out onto the floor late in the fourth quarter when the Bulls have already coughed up whatever the lead was that they had. Too little, too late. Some of that is on Boylan. Some of that is on Zach LaVine making the ball get stuck a little bit because LaVine has tended to kind of go ISO a little bit too much late in these games. But at some point, Bulls fans kind of want to know that whether or not LaVine can be that guy, the ISO hero guy who can actually just go get you buckets to win a game. So far, he has not been that guy. To me, it's simple. If you want to close games, you want your offense to execute the way that it's supposed to, if you're Jim Boylan, Satoransky should be on the floor more. And I'm not necessarily saying that he should be on the floor more and take minutes away from Kobe White, because I know a lot of Bulls fans are pissed off to Kobe White after such an exciting start of the season, only got like 16 minutes against the Knicks. Well, you're also playing two other point guards, Jim Boylan, Chris Dunn and Archie. And I talked the other day about how the Dunn, Archie, and White, three-point guard lineup is not looking all that hot. It's not looking great. The results have not been great. So Boylan's got to think about mixing up his rotation, maybe shortening his rotation, and putting Satoransky on the floor for more minutes. I'm still not giving up on Satoransky being a solid addition to this team. Not even close to giving up on that. All right, before we get to our next piece of mailbag content, just wanted to give a shout-out to our friends at Indochino. Indochino is the world's largest made-to-measure menswear brand. Start your style upgrade now with $30 off your total purchase of $399 or more at Indochino.com when entering Locked On at checkout. All right, this next text comes to us from Brandon in the Burbs. After listening to Jordan break down the Monday night loss, I want to help Bulls fans push pause on the panic button. While I agree that the ball movement and ISO ball has been a problem at times in the fourth quarter of games, I agree, we were just talking about that, I'm watching a young team learn how to win close games in crunch time. Is it possible Boylan is letting them figure out the fourth quarters and letting them struggle a bit to create the cliche teachable moment around how to be closers at the NBA level? Last point, Wendell needs to be established earlier in games. If teams see him as a threat, that should open up. That should also open up the perimeter. Thanks for checking in, Brandon. Dear God, he better not be. With regard to your question about Boylan, you know, letting them figure it out and purposefully letting the Bulls struggle for the sake of being a teachable moment, to that I say, fuck no. That better not be what's going on. Because we all know and are terrified of the fact that there is a very real possibility that Jim Boylan is nothing more than a rah-rah high school coach who somehow found his way to an NBA head coaching job. And that would not necessarily be out of character for a guy like that. But as Brandon says, I'm watching a young team learn how to win close games in crunch time. No, we are watching a young team blow close games in crunch time. And I think that that falls on, yes, the players themselves and also Jim Boylan and his failure to close games and be a better coach than the guy coaching the other team. It's not a coincidence that this team has already blown two big leads in fourth quarters of games that they have completely had in control and should have won and then didn't. That's not a coincidence. That is getting out coached in addition to getting out played. So, it, you know, this idea of, well, you know, they're a young team, teachable moments, and Jim Boylan letting his guys fail because they're young players that need to, like, go through the bumps and bruises and the turbulence of learning how to win close games and, for some reason, wanting them to experience what it feels like to blow leads late in games and lose those games? No. And, you know, I'm not, like, you know, going hard at Brandon here. I understand the hypothetical that he's raising and maybe wondering if that's what's going on. I am saying that better fucking not be what's going on because that is so ridiculously stupid. Let's not forget that this team came out on media day, John Paxson and Jim Boylan, as well as their players, and said, our goal is to make the playoffs this season. You don't lose games on purpose. You don't let your players fail and falter, and you don't abandon them for quote-unquote teachable moments because they're a young team that needs to quote-unquote learn how to win at the NBA level. That's fucking bullshit. And I don't believe that that's what's going on. What I believe is going on is they're a young team that has failed to close games because of their lack of execution and the fact that their head coach doesn't know how to close games himself. With his rotation, with his timeouts, with all of the things that involve making in-game adjustments that Boylan has never shown us he is capable of doing. That's why they're losing. It's not on purpose so that Jim Boylan can teach them a lesson. That's ridiculous. You can't go out there on media day and say our goal is to make the playoffs and then let your team lose for a quote-unquote teachable moment. That's asinine. Moving on. No surprise Portis torched us. Hashtag chip on shoulder. Chris Dunn plays like he's trying to figure, like he's trying out for the starter spot and will continue to do so. Hashtag I gotta get mines. Also, what's the over-under on games before Boylan is fired? These rotations and lineups suck. That's from the 917. Thank you for that. Enjoy the hashtags as well. Look, I talked about Bobby, you know, in my episode yesterday reacting to his takeover, the Bobby Portis massacre at MSG. Happy for him. And yes, of course, I was not surprised that he circled that game on his calendar and said, I'm going to ball out. And he did. 28 points. A lot of that came in the fourth quarter. Dunn playing like he's trying out for the starting spot. Look, I think we talk about Dunn embracing his role as a defense first guy off the bench. He's, you know, we keep hearing, oh, he's saying all the right things and doing all the right things. And he came in to training camp, like, refocused and ready to embrace that role on the team. But we all know that if the Bulls get a decent offer for Dunn, especially if that includes some wing depth before that deadline in a few months, he's going to be gone. that is still very much the scenario. I do find myself being frustrated watching Chris Dunn on the offensive end because it's still a lot of the same stuff. He can, you know, break guys down off the dribble a little bit and attack the rim, but much like has always been a problem with Dunn, he's not very good at finishing at the rim. He's getting blocked. He's just missing close looks. And then when he's playing off the ball on offense, what do we see? We see bricked threes. We see airballed threes. It's all the same. I don't necessarily think that Dunn is trying to fight for the starting spot. I think he's just trying to, you know, make his presence felt as the, you know, the defense first guy on that second unit. But he is also, I think, sometimes trying to do a little too much on the offensive end in that second unit, especially when he's sharing the court with Coby White, and Coby White should be the one creating all that offense. You know, I do think that Jim Boylan is a little too in love with Chris Dunn and his defensive contributions to this team, and I'm not selling it short. You know, I think Dunn's averaging like 2.2 steals per game so far, and his contributions on the defensive end should not be completely, you know, unappreciated and overlooked. There's a reason that that Boylan has him in that rotation. Personally, though, I think he's using Dunn a little too much because of the lack of ability on the offensive end. And then, final point from the 917, over-under on games before Boylan is fired. Look, this is an interesting topic to me. And I know a lot of Bulls fans are saying, don't panic, it's four games. But I know probably a significantly larger portion of the fan base right now is saying, holy crap, I can't believe that they extended this guy's contract. He's a joke. He can't coach. His rotations, his defensive system, it's all bad. And I don't fault you for having that opinion after four games. It certainly looks like that. The interesting thing is that back in May, the Bulls completely doubled down, and Jim Boylan got a vote of confidence from Michael Reinsdorf, from John Paxson, and Gar Foreman. And then we had all the stories about how, oh, you know, the whole near mutiny thing from the players, water under the bridge. Zach LaVine was recently on the Low Post, Zach Lowe's podcast, earlier this week. Go check that out if you haven't listened to it. It's a really interesting interview. And part of their conversation was Lowe asking LaVine about that whole instance and what happened and was it overblown and what needed to happen for LaVine and Boylan to get on the same page, because that's the party line that we keep hearing right now, is that Boylan and LaVine have come to an understanding. And that, you know, LaVine was frustrated with Boylan just completely putting the brakes on things and slowing things down. And, you know, LaVine said to Lowe, and I thought it was pretty funny, he was like, you know, Boylan was saying, well, we need to crawl before we can walk. And LaVine said, well, you know, man, I can run. So clearly there was, you know, some frustration there from Zach. It seems like now they have found some kind of understanding. But I wonder just how much they are putting forth that line of, yeah, all right, we've reached an understanding. You know, I know how much Jim cares about his players, and, you know, we're on the same page now. If the Bulls keep losing games, if the Bulls keep losing games to teams that they theoretically should beat as a team that's supposed to be vying for a playoff spot this season, and guess what? If you're trying to be a playoff team, even in the weak East, you should beat Charlotte. You should certainly beat the fucking Knicks. My God. And yeah, probably going to be, you know, losing to Toronto, but losing by nearly 30? These are not the results that Zach LaVine and his teammates were hoping for. Some of it falls on them. But if they are not actually buying in to what Boylan is preaching, and they're just trying to make that the party line to the media and to the fan base, and at some point this season they can't do it anymore. Most often, this, you know, in this league, we see organizations value players over coaches. Heck, they traded Jimmy because Jimmy and Fred weren't getting along, and Jimmy had his own stuff. But then they ditched Fred and they brought in Jim. Who are you going to get rid of? Are you going to get rid of Zach LaVine? Or are you going to get rid of Jim Boylan? The worrying and absolutely terrifying part to me is that it sounds like, and Casey Johnson even said this again recently. He said it before. He was on the Full 48 The Amazing Howard Beck podcast, which you should also go and listen to. So much good content out there in the world of podcasts. Of course there is. But he was talking to Howard Beck about how he has never, in his near 30 years of covering the team, seen a front office and coach be more in lockstep. That's the word he used. Lockstep. Meaning, Jim Boylan, John Paxson, Michael Reinsdorf, they're all lovey-dovey. They're a little thruple right now, and they are all so in tune and in sync with what they're doing and what they're trying to accomplish with this team. And that, to me, is terrifying because right now it looks like Jim Boylan is a guy way in over his head. Can't coach at the NBA level. Certainly can't be a head coach at the NBA level. And if he's the guy, John Paxson and Michael Reinsdorf believe that he is the guy. And guess what? They gave him an extension earlier this year. Details of the extension are still a little foggy, but it's believed to be a fresh three-year deal. So they wiped away the existing year on his old contract from when he was an associate head coach. Believed to be a new three-year deal, and there might be a team option on that third and final year. But that still means that the dude's got this year, got next year. We also know that the Bulls are not afraid to fire coaches and pay them to go away. Because guess what? They've done it to their previous two coaches before Jim Boylan. Thibodeau had years remaining on his contract. They fired him, paid him to go away. Fred Hoiberg, remaining years on his contract, fired him, paid him to go away. Now, you know, Tibbs and Hoiberg both took jobs. Tibbs with Minnesota and then Fred back at the college level in Nebraska that counteracted some of their remaining contracts. But still, when the decision was made to fire the coach, they had more money going out to said coach. So it's possible that if things really just are in the toilet again to start the season, when you shouldn't have any excuses, and, you know, knock on wood, you are playing with a completely, almost fully healthy roster, especially the most important pieces of said roster, and you're still losing games to the bottom of the barrel teams, the Eastern Conference, when people thought that you should be getting out to a nice start to the season because it's the back end of the season schedule that's actually going to be really challenging. If you start, you know, 5 to 10 games under 500 as Jim Boylan through the first 20 or so games of the season, the Bulls have to look themselves in the mirror and think, oh my God, is this really the guy that we attached ourselves to and are so enamored with? Because maybe he ain't it. And maybe you do have to think about bringing in somebody else. Because I don't know how much longer LaVine and his teammates can keep up this charade of, we believe in Jim, Jim's the guy, we're all on the same page, we're buying in. I don't know how longer that can go on if the Bulls continue to look like this and continue to lose games they should, theoretically, win. It's a very worrying situation. Thanks for checking in. All right, one more, and then let's get out of here. More interesting thoughts on Jim Boylan. Not a surprise to me that Boylan's a hot topic of conversation among Bulls fans right now. This one comes to us from the 847. What happened to Jim Boylan? What happened to the no-nonsense, tough coaching? I'm tired of hearing him talk about, you know, we did blank well tonight after bad losses, especially this one, referencing the Knicks loss. I need to see some accountability from someone on this team. Anybody. This would be the type of moment where Tibbs gave a do your job speech. Instead, we get a, well, at least we played better than we did against the Raptors post-game reaction from Boylan. If you're going to set the playoffs as your goal, you need to hold yourself accountable as a playoff team would. P.S. Stop giving Luke Kornet playing time, in all caps. Thanks for checking in. I agree. I am equally frustrated with Boylan's post-game commentary so far. It seems soft. It seems like he's trying to only build up the positives. He has talked about what he thinks his team has struggled with in losses. Most recently, talking about how, you know, the physicality is important and they need to find ways to use physicality to win games more so than maybe scheme or talent, which is a horrifying quote in and of itself, but also talking about getting completely crushed and outmanned on the boards Monday night. So he has talked about areas where the team needs to get better, but he's trying to make these weird positive spins. Like saying on Monday night, you know, like I saw us do a lot of things better, referencing when they got blown out by nearly 30 to the Raptors in their previous game. I don't like it. Boylan seems to me to be kind of just like soft in these post-game interviews. And the stuff about, you know, the tough coaching stuff, and also hearing about him canceling shoot-arounds, and the guy who, you know, his players nearly walked out on him for trying to schedule, you know, a practice in the middle of a back-to-back after a 56-point loss and all this stuff. And then, and now this season, there's a very different tune, because Boylan still talks the talk of grit and toughness and pure heart and bulls across the chest and all this stuff about being like everybody's got to buy in and my way or the highway. But we're hearing about these recent things going on where maybe Boylan's lightening up a bit. And honestly, you wonder if the Bulls hadn't had canceled shoot-arounds, if they would have shot better in a couple of these losses where they shot terribly. So yes, it is puzzling. And I don't love what I've been hearing from Boylan post-game. And it largely goes to the other thing that our texter from the 847 brought up, which is accountability. Because I have yet to hear Jim Boylan say in any of his post-game thoughts in their three losses, that's on me. Especially considering that some of his questionable timeout usage, some of his questionable rotations down the stretch have, in my opinion, led to these inexcusable losses where they blow a late lead to a bad team. Yes, the players are accountable to some degree. Yes, the players have not shot well. Yes, the Bulls might be 2-2 or 3-1 if a couple more baskets go their way. But lack of execution down the stretch and a failure to make in-game adjustments down the stretch, it's partly on the players. It's mostly on the coach. So I don't like the fact that Boylan has been talking about this and that, and we need to do this better, but we still did this well, in his post-game comments after some of these losses. And I haven't heard him say a single thing about himself needing to coach better. I don't like that. And P.S., stop giving Luke Kornet minutes. There is a quick update for y'all there when it comes to this Bulls front court rotation. We heard from Darnell Mayberry of The Athletic around 11:30 or noon today that Wendell Carter Jr. woke up with an eye infection in both of his eyes. There's some swelling in both eyes, and he is questionable for tonight's game, which is a bummer considering how well Wendell played in that Knicks game. He had a 2010 game, looked like certainly his best game of the season and honestly one of the better games of his career. He also, you know, was a force at the rim. He had three or four blocks on the night, and his shot was falling. And that was actually something from a previous texter that I forgot to get to about, you know, maybe trying to establish Wendell on the offensive end, and that maybe opening up some other opportunities for the Bulls offense. And Wendell has never been very aggressive on the offensive end looking for his stuff, but I think he was like 7 of 9 or 7 of 10 from the field in that loss to the Knicks. Very efficient. He was getting good looks around the basket as opposed to, and like he was getting good looks in the previous games too. He just was missing them. He was missing a lot of bunnies. He was making his good looks around the rim. He even, you know, hit like a nice mid-range jumper in that loss to the Knicks. So, yes, Wendell looked better. And hopefully we see him in the game tonight. Hopefully that swelling goes down. He's able to play. If not, then you have to assume we're going to get to see Daniel Gafford out there tonight. Luke Kornet has not shot the ball well, and he has not rebounded well, and he has not protected the rim well. And Boylan still, before the Knicks game, said, yes, absolutely, Kornet's in the rotation and Gafford is not. Well, Boylan also talked to us after the loss to the Knicks, saying we got out-rebounded, and that's inexcusable. Maybe Daniel Gafford can give you some rebounds, because Kornet only gave you one in like 17 minutes off the bench. So the hashtag free Daniel Gafford, part of Bulls Nation And I certainly think I am jumping into that pool based on how much Cornette has struggled to start the season. If Wendell can't go tonight, I think we're going to finally see our wish, and Gafford is going to get himself onto the floor. Now, does that mean that Boylan shifts everybody bump and bumps everybody up one? Does he put Cornette in the starting lineup? Does he maybe put Thad Young in the starting lineup and have the Bulls go small, put Thad Young and Markkanen together in the front court if Wendell can't go? Or do you start Gafford and bring Cornette in off the bench? Boylan's rotations with pairing Lowry and Cornette have not gotten have not gone well. They're getting very exposed on the defensive end. So we'll see if Wendell can go tonight, and hopefully he can. If he can't, though, what's Boylan going to do with that rotation? We might finally see some of that awesome Gafford stuff that we saw in preseason and Bulls fans are clamoring for after these four rough games from Luke Cornett. That's going to do it. I know I didn't get to nearly close to all of the Bulls mailbag content from all of our amazing, wonderful listeners. There's so much in our inbox right now. We will do our best to get to as much of it as we can, perhaps even just responding to some of you directly if we can't squeeze them into today's episode and then further episodes. But appreciate truly how much y'all are hitting up that text and voicemail line. It's one of our favorite parts about doing this show, if not the favorite part, is talking to you, our fellow Bulls fans, and hearing what you have to say and hearing your thoughts on this team that we all love so much that's currently letting us down and driving us crazy. So until next time, remember to check out all those other great Locked On shows for the Chicago sports family. Locked On Blackhawks, Jay Zawoski doing tremendous work with that new show. Herb Lawrence, one of Jay's 670 The Score co-workers. Same thing with Jordan Malley, who's also now doing production work for 670, has recently taken over and done the Locked On Sox and joined that to the Locked On Chicago family. And, of course, Sean Sears doing great stuff with Locked On Cubs and Lauren Cox with Locked On Bears. Check all that out. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On Bulls. I'm at Bulls underscore Peck, and Jordan's at Jordan C. Malley. And, of course, you can also always just shoot us an email at LockedOnBulls@gmail.com. Until next time, thanks always for listening. We will be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. Hopefully, we can watch the Bulls get a W tonight against Kevin Love and the Cleveland Cavaliers. Until next time, Bulls Nation, see you red. Be good. Peace out.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com